The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
From the Texas Tribune Festival in Austin, retired Navy Admiral William McRaven.
Do you think there is something unique about this president's description of basic facts?
Folks that are even Trump supporters know that he is misleading in certain areas. If you're prepared to tell small lies, then you're probably going to tell big lies as well.
Tune in this weekend for politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
President Trump defies Congress.
President Trump is not planning to comply with lawmakers' demands for documents related to Ukraine until there is a full vote on the House floor to formally begin an impeachment inquiry.
And later, dolphins in the Potomac.
They are coming in there to feed, they're coming in there to breed, and to give birth.
And now, from the Capital One Bank Studios in the CBS News Washington Bureau, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend at the White House, where President Trump is taking a defiant stance against the impeachment inquiry in Congress. It comes as the president accuses Joe Biden and his family of corruption in Ukraine and China, continuing to call for investigations.
President Trump is not planning to comply with lawmakers' demands for documents related to Ukraine until there is a full vote on the House floor to formally begin an impeachment inquiry.
We've been treated very unfairly.
That inquiry has already begun.
Any effort the administration makes to obstruct our ability to get the facts will only add to the body of evidence on a potential article involving the obstruction of the lawful functions of Congress.
President Trump argued he has a right to end corruption, even if it means asking a foreign government for help.
What I want to look at and what we want to investigate, anything having to do with corruption.
Kurt Volker, the former special envoy to Ukraine, provided Congress with text messages during a nine-hour deposition Thursday. In one exchange, the top diplomat in Ukraine wrote, "I think it's crazy to withhold security assistance for help with a political campaign." But the ambassador to the EU replied, "I believe you are incorrect about President Trump's intentions. The president has been crystal clear. No quid pro quos of any kind." Nicole Killian, CBS News, the White House.
Congress also asking for documents from Rudy Giuliani and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. A new book goes behind the scenes of the Trump administration's struggle with immigration policy and an influx of migrants.
The book depicts a week in March in which President Trump was so angry about caravans of migrants heading north that he talked about sealing off the entire U.S.-Mexico border. In Border Wars, published by CBS-owned Simon & Schuster, two New York Times reporters revealed the president privately excoriated his advisors, shouting, "I ran on this. It's my issue." Mr. Trump reportedly demanded the border wall be electrified or painted black so as to become too hot to touch. The authors say he suggested building a trench filled with alligators and snakes. And the book says at one point the president spoke of shooting migrants in the legs to slow them down. Aides replied that would be illegal. Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, Washington.
Reports say he also considered arming border forces with bayonets. 78-year-old Democratic presidential candidate Senator Bernie Sanders is recovering from surgery to implant stents in his arteries Tuesday after chest pain, canceling campaign appearances and ad buys. CBS's Kara Corti covers the Sanders campaign.
Voters might be raising their eyebrows, wondering how the senator's health is.
We expect to see Sanders take part in this month's presidential debate in Ohio. Another Democrat has been generating headlines after she became the target of Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg.
If she gets elected president, then I would bet that we will have a legal challenge, and I would bet that we will win the legal challenge.
In leaked audio, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg tried to assure employees during a July meeting that he would push back against a plan by Senator Elizabeth Warren to break up big tech companies.
Does that still suck for us? Yeah. But look, at the end of the day, if someone's going to try to threaten something that existential, you go to the mat and you fight.
Warren fired back on Twitter. "What would really suck," she said, "is if we don't fix a corrupt system that lets giant companies like Facebook engage in illegal anti-competitive practices, stomp on consumer privacy rights, and repeatedly fumble their responsibility to protect our democracy."
Zuckerberg argues breaking up big tech companies will make it harder for those companies to address important issues, including election interference. Warren argues the companies are too big to police themselves.
Correspondent Ed O'Keefe reporting. Hidden video was used to help indict a Chinese-American accused of being a spy.
Surveillance video shows Edward Pong, a naturalized U.S. citizen, wrapping $20,000 in cash and taping it under a TV stand in a hotel in Columbus, Georgia. About 3 hours later, he's back to pick up an SD card containing classified national security information. A double agent working for the FBI had left the card in the drawer before taking the $20,000. The so-called dead drop was one of six that took place in Northern California and Georgia. Pong was working as a San Francisco tour guide for Chinese tourists. But U.S. Attorney David Anderson says he was actually working for the People's Republic of China.
Pong was a secret agent completing dead drops, delivering payments.
Authorities say the double agent penetrated the spy ring in the San Francisco area in 2015. The agent was directed to Pong, who would pick up the memory cards and fly them from the U.S. to China. Former CIA Acting Director Michael Morell says the spy game between the U.S. and China is on the rise.
This arrest is the fourth case we've seen of Chinese espionage just in the last several months.
The U.S. attorney said Northern California is ground zero in the fight to protect technology and intellectual property. U.S. investigators say they had tight controls over the classified information turned over in those dead drops to Pong, who immigrated to the U.S. in 2001. Jeff Begays, CBS News, Washington.
Dozens of people have been killed in protests in Iraq as the U.S. military worries about unrest there. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick talked to an Iraqi immigrant about what's behind the protests.
Iraqis are frustrated by high unemployment and the political situation, among other things.
All the elections that have been the last three terms, they lead to the same faces and the same people. And Iraqis are fed up. You know, it's the same. It's like that they're stuck in that wheel, you know, security, lack of services, poverty, lack of chances, you know, unemployment, and they cannot take it anymore.
Ahmed is an Iraqi who moved to the U.S. years ago, but is watching events back home with concern.
If Iraqis don't treat this carefully, the people and the government, it can easily turn into another civil war and thousands of people will die again, and this is what worries me.
And he compares the situation to what happened in Syria when the people rose up against President Assad.
The Al-Assad regime have learned a lot from what happened in Iraq, and so when the revolution rose against him about 5 or 6 years ago, he turned it into a civil war. He started fueling the, you know, the making turning the face of the revolution into a face of terrorism. He stopped sending ISIS and Al-Qaeda to Iraq, and he started using them against his people. So the revolution in Syria has, you know, eventually died and faded away.
He said already in Iraq, some politicians are labeling the protesters as loyal to Islamic State or even the former regime of Saddam Hussein. The U.S. military, meanwhile, is calling on all sides to reduce tensions and calls the situation deeply concerning. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, The Pentagon.
Coming up, a massive settlement tied to the Las Vegas mass shooting. That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
MGM Resorts has reached a settlement with the victims of the Las Vegas shooting that left 58 people dead and hundreds more injured during an outdoor concert.
2 years after this, the worst mass shooting in modern American history, an enormous settlement.
Approximately $735 to $800 million.
MGM Resorts, which owns the Mandalay Bay Hotel, will not be on the hook for most or possibly any of that. The company has insurance coverage for $751 million. Robert Eglett is the lead attorney for the plaintiffs.
This would have been a difficult case on both sides.
More than 4,400 plaintiffs are involved, including those wounded and the families of those killed. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
Emotional moments inside a Dallas courtroom Wednesday before the sentencing of an ex-city cop convicted of killing her unarmed black neighbor.
An extraordinary moment in a Dallas courtroom Wednesday.
Can I give her a hug, please?
18-year-old Brant Jean forgave Amber Geiger, who'd just been sentenced to 10 years in prison for killing his older brother, Botham.
I love you as a person, and I don't wish anything bad on you.
The former Dallas police officer testified that she killed John after mistakenly entering his apartment, thinking it was her own.
That 10 years in prison is 10 years for her reflection and for her to change her life.
Geiger faced up to 99 years in prison. Prosecutors had asked for 28 years, which is how old John would have been.
I still want to see it.
Both families testified during the sentencing phase. Geiger's mother said her daughter wished she could take Jean's place.
She feels really bad about it.
Some outside the courtroom thought the sentence was too lenient. Though many calmed down after seeing video of that emotional hug. Dallas Police Chief Renee Hall says that embrace is a model for the department, which has been under scrutiny since the shooting.
Dallas today is different than it was yesterday.
At the end of the hearing, Judge Tammy Kemp hugged Jean's family. She also gave a Bible to Geiger and embraced her as well. Laura Podesta, CBS News.
Seven people are being remembered this weekend after they were killed when an historic World War II airplane crashed at Hartford, Connecticut's airport.
Dark black smoke filled the Connecticut sky moments after the 75-year-old B-17 bomber crash-landed off the runway at Bradley Airport with 13 people on board.
I thought, boy, I hope it makes the airport.
Claire Palmer saw the plane moments before the crash.
It was sputtering and popping noise, and I thought, what's the matter with that engine?
Boeing 93012, we'd like to return to the field.
What's the reason for coming back?
We've got number four engine. We'd like to return and blow it out.
The four-engine propeller-driven plane took off at 9:45 Wednesday morning. Just 5 minutes later, the pilots made that emergency call. And at 9:54, they landed short of the runway at Bradley and crashed into a nearby de-icing facility and maintenance building.
The left wing is broken off, and there are various pieces of the plane across the facility.
Jennifer Homedy is with the NTSB.
Are you surprised people survived this crash?
This was a significant tragedy, and from the scene, I am surprised that people survived.
Robert Rydell, a World War II buff, is one of the passengers who died in the crash. They paid as much as $450 for a 30-minute ride Wednesday. His family said this flight was on his bucket list.
Rydell's son tells CBS News he's taking comfort in knowing at least his father was doing something he loved. Now, there were only about 10 of these flying B-17s left. They typically do not have black boxes. So the National Transportation Safety Board says one of the focuses will be finding cameras, cell phones, any electronic devices on the plane that may give them a sense as to what happened on board. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, Hartford, Connecticut.
Now to Hong Kong, where violence broke out on the 70th anniversary of communist rule in China, which now controls the city. Remy Innocencio is our CBS News correspondent covering the protests in Hong Kong. Remy, how bad were the demonstrations on Tuesday?
The protests that we saw were pretty much the worst that we have ever seen ever since these protests began in the past 17 weeks. Basically, they spread across several districts, both here in Hong Kong Island as well as across Victoria Harbor in residential areas, in Kowloon as well as the New Territories. Clashes between police and protesters range from tear gas and water cannons to bricks, as well as laser lights, things that we've been seeing over the past 4 months, but really stretched across neighborhoods in a way that we've never seen before.
There was also a significant international response, including from the UK, to police using live ammunition on some protesters, including injuring one teenager. What was the response there?
Yes. On the ground here, this was the first time that anyone was injured from live ammunition being used. In the past, police have fired live ammunition into the air to try to force protesters to back off from their attacks. But this has been met with derision, anger, and now coming to a head and to this new phase where this one police officer shot a protester who was attacking him, but at point-blank range in the chest. That protester is now in critical condition, but he is expected to survive.
So what is it these protesters actually want now?
Right now, they want ultimately universal suffrage. Now, the reason for that is that Hong Kongers don't have a one-person, one-vote ability. They can't elect their top leader, their chief executive. That person right now is someone who is very, very embattled, Chief Executive Carrie Lam, who is polling at record low numbers for anyone who has ever held her position. Now, in the past, about 5 years ago, Beijing, who does appoint that chief executive, gave a partial kind of electoral freedom, saying that Hong Kongers could elect their chief executive, but that Beijing, and only Beijing, had the power to choose who those candidates were.
So then how has the Chinese response to these protests evolved, and have they continued to back Carrie Lam?
Well, President Xi Jinping in Beijing gave only a few words to Hong Kong, saying that he wanted Hong Kong to maintain long-term stability, in addition to other special administrative regions like Macau and, to a degree, Taiwan, which he considers a rogue province. But he talked about unity. With that said, looking at what's been happening with the chaos on the streets on October 1st, there is anything but any semblance of normalcy right now on the streets of Hong Kong.
CBS News correspondent Remy Innocencio in Hong Kong. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, following Brexit.
It is something between three-dimensional chess and juggling chainsaws.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
CBS News Radio presents Security Matters with renowned global security expert Paul Violas. Paul tackles security issues like terrorism and cybercrime.
Where does privacy begin and end? At someone's home and while they're on the phone.
Plus, Paul's partnering with the Fraternal Order of Police to highlight cold cases across the country that need national exposure.
The reason why we're doing this is to increase bringing justice and bringing these people to justice.
Subscribe to Security Matters on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Expect to pay more for some of the food and drinks you love, thanks to the growing U.S. trade war with Europe. More from CBS's Gwen Baumgartner in London.
French wine, Italian cheese, and Scotch whiskey are some of the first casualties in the looming trade war between the United States and Europe. The most recent trade battle stems from a complaint filed against aviation giant Airbus. The World Trade Organization ruled that European countries have illegally subsidized the company, making it harder for American rival Boeing to compete. So now the WTO is allowing the U.S. to impose 25% taxes on $7.5 billion worth of imported goods from Europe.
Under the WTO's rules, you don't have to penalize only the industry that you're arguing about. You can hit any products you like.
President Trump took to Twitter, writing, "The European Union has for many years treated the USA very badly on trade." He called the ruling a nice victory. Europeans aren't happy. Lucia Quadrini says it's a twisted idea by President Trump. She says Americans go crazy for Italian goods, and now we all lose. European leaders are promising to hit back with their own tariffs soon.
This is a move that will first and foremost hit U.S. consumers and companies.
The proposed tariffs take effect in 2 weeks. Gwen Baumgartner, CBS News, London.
There's been a lot of development in Brexit over the last week, so let's check in with our Vicky Barker at the London Bureau, who's kept an eagle eye on all this. Vicky, let's start with Prime Minister Boris Johnson's new Brexit proposal. As he still presses for the UK to leave the EU by the end of the month, what is he proposing?
Hi, Steve. Yes, Boris Johnson says he's finally come up with some compromise proposals that he thinks both Britain's parliament and EU leaders can live with. Now, he's put them before both bodies. This is going to be making its peristaltic way through various organs of government over the next few weeks. Basically, it is mind-numbingly complex, but the important thing is that Boris Johnson claims that he's found a way out of what happens after Brexit when Northern Ireland suddenly becomes Britain's only land border with the EU. In other words, that now invisible dividing line between Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic suddenly becomes, hopefully, a still invisible land border.
Now, we can talk about the significance of this all day, but essentially, Ireland will, of course, remain in the EU. Northern Ireland will, of course, leave the EU with the rest of the UK. Right now, there's no real border there, right?
Exactly, Steve. And reopening that border is what helped end decades of sectarian violence in Northern Ireland. Now, nobody is calling for a return of a hard border, but nobody's come up with a solution that absolutely everybody loves. It's hard to find ways around it. Now, what Boris Johnson wants is that instead of staying in the EU's customs union, which is what the deal that Theresa May reached with the EU, which has been defeated in Parliament three times, would have called for, the whole of the UK would leave the EU's customs union, which would mean that there would be, at least in theory, a new customs border between Northern Ireland and the Republic with new requirements for cross-border traders. But Johnson thinks it doesn't mean putting border posts back in place. You can do a lot of this electronically. He's talking about sort of so-called trusted trader schemes and more simplified customs procedures.
Yeah, you said simplified, though, according to Boris Johnson. I've read some reports that this involves bonds that these trucking companies across the border would have to take out. There would be GPS monitoring. This all sounds very complicated.
Well, there are two big problems in that, which people in Ireland have been quick to point out. One is relying on so-called trusted trader schemes. Well, that's great for the trustworthy traders, but what happens with the smooth operators, the people who are going to try and use that invisible border as a way to smuggle things in and out of the EU, the UK? The other thing is Boris Johnson's plan does allude to the idea that there might be some physical facilities where people can go through customs paperwork. Well, what the Irish are saying is that just sounds like a border post by any other name, even if it's a couple of miles away from the actual physical border. And the slightest hint that there's going to be any erosion in that open border between the North and the Republic has already started to spark some return of sectarian violence. And the very first thing that would be targeted would be anything that would seem to be a customs post. So the Irish are, you know, quite understandably worried about a return not just to sectarian violence north of the border, but to, you know, terrorists and attacks on property and people on their side of the border as well.
All right. Last weekend, we reported that the Supreme Court in Britain ruled Johnson's decision to suspend Parliament last month unlawful. Now he wants to do it again. What's up with that?
Yes. Well, now he is talking about possibly proroguing, as it's called, Parliament for a few days, maybe starting next week. Now, that is actually something that is done routinely ahead of what's called a Queen's speech. Now, that is when a new government lays out its legislative plans for the coming term. Boris Johnson is a new prime minister. He just assumed the job back in July. This would be his chance to introduce his legislative agenda to Parliament and to the British people. But there are some who still feel like he's going to be putting the Queen in a pretty uncomfortable position because there's a pretty strong feeling here in London that what this actually is going to be is the start of an election campaign, that once we're through October 31st, he's probably going to call for early elections here, and that in a way the Queen, who has been put through the mortification of having a prorogation that she put her royal signature to being ruled unlawful in that Supreme Court ruling, is now going to be put in the position of effectively, you know, reading aloud electioneering propaganda for Boris Johnson, as some of his harshest critics are putting it.
All right. Lots of moving parts over in the British Isles.
Yeah, Steve, I would call it something between, you know, trying to get something through that will be accepted by all 27 EU leaders and members of Parliament. And bear in mind, Parliament's already voted down three times the previous Brexit deal. It is something between three-dimensional chess and juggling chainsaws.
CBS News correspondent Vicky Barker at the Foreign Desk in London watching it all. Thank you, Vicky.
Thank you, Steve.
Coming up on the weekend roundup, researchers find new clues to what's behind the illnesses linked to vaping.
They found that vaping causes direct damage, similar to what happens to lungs when exposed to chemical fumes.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Scientists are learning more about vaping-related lung illnesses. CBS's Jim Shenevy has the story.
Researchers at the Mayo Clinic may have identified how vaping causes lung illness, and it's not lipid pneumonia, as some have suggested. Through biopsies of tissue samples from 17 vaping patients, they found that vaping causes direct damage, similar to what happens to lungs when exposed to chemical fumes. What they have not identified, not yet anyway, is what is doing it. More than 800 Americans have suffered severe lung damage from vaping. Many were young people vaping THC and nicotine, but some were vaping nicotine alone. Jim Shenevy, CBS News.
New research suggesting eating red meat doesn't affect your heart health is raising eyebrows in medical communities. More from CBS News medical correspondent Dr. Tara Narula.
The studies, published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, conclude there's little to no effects from eating meat on illnesses like heart disease, cancer, or diabetes. The controversial study also recommends consumers who eat as much as 4 servings a week can continue to do so. Those results run counter to long-established health guidelines to reduce consumption of red and processed meats because of their links to cancer and poor cardiovascular health. The nonprofit Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine called the results misrepresentations and said that there's abundant evidence linking red and processed meat to heart disease and increased risk of premature death, adding the findings are a major disservice to public health and wants the medical journal to issue a public retraction.
Dr. Tara Narula reporting. There's some good news for the Potomac and perhaps a sign of its improving health. Janet Mann is a professor at Georgetown University and works with the Potomac Chesapeake Dolphin Project. Janet, you've been seeing more dolphins in the river.
Well, yes, we started the project in 2015 because we noticed that there were dolphins in the river, and we have steadily been identifying more dolphins, but we've had more intensive effort. And so the problem is that nobody has really looked at dolphins in the Potomac River before, and we couldn't find any literature about it. So we don't really know that they're increasing. It's just we know we are seeing more each year.
Where are you seeing them? Because I feel like I go over the bridge or one of the bridges in D.C. all the time, and I never see dolphins.
One thing is that you have to be looking pretty carefully, but also we're working primarily in the lower Potomac. So the tidal Potomac goes up to Washington, D.C., and then actually the Potomac extends a couple hundred more miles. It's just not the tidal portion. So they're in the lower part of the tidal Potomac and the part that empties out into the Chesapeake Bay.
And why are they going there? Is it a safer place to either mate or give birth than the Chesapeake Bay?
Well, we think that there are a lot of animals in the Chesapeake Bay as well. It's just that it's open waters, and the Potomac we can monitor very easily because it's a bit calmer there. But these are very coastal, shallow water animals that we see, so a lot of times we're following them in just a few feet of water, and they are coming in there to feed, they're coming in there to breed, and to give birth.
But are we talking about observations that in the Potomac would give you an estimate of what, 5 dolphins or hundreds of dolphins?
Well, there's definitely thousands in the sort of Chesapeake-Potomac area. In the first year, we documented 200. The second year, we were up to 300, then 500, then 800, and now we're over 1,000.
What does it mean to see these dolphins? There's been a lot of reporting about how this could be a signal that the waters of the Potomac are improving.
Well, we don't know. We do know that the waters in the Potomac have been improving, although this year there was a significant dead zone in the north part of the Potomac and other parts of the Chesapeake, which was attributed largely to heavy rains, which cause more agricultural runoff, and that can cause a lack of oxygen in the water, and you get these dead zones. We'll see what the water report is like, but that's basically one of our questions, is how the abundance and distribution of the dolphins varies from year to year.
And how do you track these dolphins?
Well, we have a little dinghy, a little boat, and we go out and do what's called a transect, which is basically a predetermined line you drive, and we have everybody looking sort of 360 around the boat for dolphins, and then when we see a dolphin, we mark where we leave the transect and go and survey that group and who's there and what they're doing. So we photograph everybody. So we identify them by the dorsal fin. So we take a picture of the dorsal fin, and we have a massive catalog for matching the dorsal fins. And we record things like who's got a baby. And then we go back when we finish that, which can take a long time because sometimes the groups are anywhere from 1 to close to 200 individuals. And then we go back to the transect line and continue. And so then we finish. We have 8 transects, and we do those as many times as we can in a given month, 4 or 6 months.
Some friendly flippers in the waters near the Capitol Swamp. Georgetown University's Janet Mann on the Weekend Roundup. Thanks, Janet.
You're welcome.
California's paving the way for college athletes hoping to earn more money playing sports with a new law, but it's facing opposition from the NCAA, reports CBS's Jamie Yukis from Los Angeles.
It's time for change, and I think, you know, this is a step in the right direction.
Draymond Green with a dunk!
Draymond Green, Golden State Warriors star and formerly a standout player for Michigan State, says the new law is a win for more than just California's players.
I think, you know, the more states you get to start adding to, you know, taking this into effect, you know, the better chance we'll get of the NCAA changing their laws.
Here's LeBron, lead pass.
LA Lakers star LeBron James agrees. He says many star college athletes struggle to make ends meet.
I understand what those kids are going through. I feel for those kids who've been going through it for so long.
James says he was proud to share the moment when the governor signed the bill into law.
Now law in California.
It's going to initiate dozens of other states to introduce similar legislation, and it's going to change college sports for the better.
But the NCAA prohibits student athletes from profiting from their sports. In a statement, it says the NCAA agrees changes are needed to continue to support student athletes, but improvement needs to happen on a national level through the NCAA's rules-making process. The NCAA warned that the bill may now give California schools an unfair recruiting tool, and that those schools may be banned from competing in the NCAA, a threat that frustrates Green.
It's not how can we work together to make this right. It's if you do this, your schools will be ineligible. It's really comical.
The new law, which goes into effect January 1st of 2023, will most positively affect players of high-profile sports like basketball and football. That's one reason the Pac-12 conference, of which UCLA is a part of, also came out against the law, saying it will lead to reduced opportunities for athletes in other sports. Jamie Yukis, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Coming up, the rising cost of ATM fees.
Getting cash is getting more expensive.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
For 48 Hours fans, a new podcast.
I'm Erin Moriarty, 48 Hours, and this is my life of crime.
Revisit the Lizzie Borden murders.
Lizzie Borden took an acid.
Go behind prison walls.
What was the crime that brought you here?
Hear a horror story that hits close to home.
Erin, there is no excuse to give your home address to a serial killer.
And much more. My Life of Crime. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
October 1st marked the beginning of a new law allowing teachers in some Florida schools to carry guns. More from correspondent Manuel Bojorquez.
It's a new day in some Florida schools, like Okeechobee High. The district here is one of 11 that have adopted a state policy that allows trained teachers to carry concealed guns into the classroom. We spoke with parents.
I think it's good. I think that, you know, they're targeted because it's a gun-free zone.
Florida's so-called Guardian program for school staff, which includes a background check, psychological exam, and more than 130 hours of range training, is now open to classroom teachers.
We look at it as we want more protection.
He walked up behind here.
Bay County School Superintendent Bill Husfeldt is all in, especially given his backstory. Hey, whoa, whoa. In 2010, a gun-wielding man stormed a school board meeting, shooting right at Husfeldt and others.
Please don't. Please
Incredibly, don't. He missed and was shot by a security guard before taking his own life.
Until you're standing in front of someone with a gun pointed at you, you don't realize how helpless you really are.
But critics of arming teachers argue mental health programs and responsible firearm ownership are better strategies.
Teachers should concentrate on their primary subject, which is teaching.
They include Tony Montalto, whose daughter Gina was one of 17 killed in last year's Parkland shooting.
We should not force them to have to make a choice between staying with the kids that are in their classroom and going out to confront an armed assailant.
It's hard to know exactly how many teachers are armed. School districts like the one here in Okeechobee do not reveal that information and say for safety reasons, the teachers must remain anonymous. It's worth noting the state's largest school districts are not participating. Manuel Bajorquez, CBS News, Okeechobee, Florida.
This weekend on 48 Hours, correspondent Nikki Batiste investigates the murder of Kelsey Barrett. Nikki joins us from New York. Good to talk to you, Nikki.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Nikki, let's start with what happened on Thanksgiving Day 2018.
That is the question. What exactly did happen to Kelsey Barrett on Thanksgiving Day last year? She went missing several days later, and this is where the case really took off in the media. She was reported missing by her mother. Her cell phone started traveling to Idaho, and this happened in Colorado. So investigators got really suspicious. That trail led them to a woman named Crystal Lee. Kelsey was engaged to a man named Patrick Frazee, a rancher in Colorado. They had a baby together. Turns out Crystal Lee was a secret girlfriend of his, and Crystal eventually tells investigators this unbelievable story. She says that Patrick asked her to kill Kelsey three different times. The very first plot, Patrick asked Crystal to get a Starbucks caramel macchiato, which was Kelsey's favorite drink. So Crystal does, and Crystal has the idea to poison this Starbucks coffee with a lethal dose of Valium and Ambien. She drives to Kelsey's apartment, knocks on the door, creates this ruse saying she's local, a new neighbor, wants to get to know Kelsey, gives Kelsey the coffee. Here's the key. She tells investigators in the end she did not poison the coffee. She calls Patrick, her lover, Kelsey's fiancé, to tell him she chickened out, and he is furious. So he comes up with two more murder plots.
And Frazee's trial begins later this month. So what are prosecutors expected to argue beyond what we've heard about these plots?
Kelsey's body has never been found. There is no murder weapons. They are really hanging their prosecution on the story of Crystal Lee. But Patrick's defense team just filed court documents saying they will point the finger back at Crystal Lee. They say they will say that Crystal's story was somewhat fabricated and that she may have even been involved in the murder. So we're expecting the trial is scheduled for October 28th for this to really be Patrick Frazee's story versus Crystal Lee's story, because so far, at the moment, we are unaware of any DNA evidence that places Patrick Frazee at the crime scene.
48 Hours airs Saturday nights on the CBS television network. You can also catch it anytime on CBS All Access. Thanks again to Nikki up there. The rising cost of getting your own money.
Getting cash is getting more expensive. Naima Hicks found that out when she got hit with two fees for using an ATM out of her bank's network.
They double charge you for things, so I don't understand why, but that's what they do.
New research from Bankrate.com shows customers who venture out of network pay an average charge of $3 to the owner of the ATM. Then the bank adds an average fee of $1.63. That total of $4.72 is up from just $2 in 1998.
ATM fees are at a record high.
Bankrate's Greg McBride says when you withdraw money, you also need to be very careful not to take too much. Overdraft fees are close to record highs at $33.36. The good news is that added charge can easily be avoided.
Your best line of defense, set up a link between your checking account and your savings account. That way, if you do slip up, it's your money that covers the shortfall.
Most banks also have apps with an ATM finder feature, something Elliot Upton takes advantage of.
I refuse to pay a fee, so I make it my business to find an ATM that I can use without a charge.
Experts say a little planning ahead can help you get cash without paying for it. Hillary Lane, CBS News, New York.
If you still have cable TV, have you checked your bill lately? CBS News correspondent Gary Nunn looks at the costly truth.
Call it cable bill cringe. There's a wide gap between the advertised price and what subscribers end up paying. A close look by Consumer Reports reveals a long list of fees, rentals, installation, premium services, and taxes, amounting to a 24% surcharge. That averages about $450 a year for consumers, generating about $28 billion a year for cable companies. And those companies aren't always upfront about such add-ons, which continue to get more pricey. Gary Nunn, CBS News.
A secret British street artist proves again he's worth a pretty penny.
Banksy has done it again. His large painting of chimpanzees replacing politicians in Britain's parliament has fetched a record auction price for a work by the British street artist, more than $12 million. It's called Devolved Parliament and had a pre-auction estimate of $1.5 million. If you go online, though, you can buy a print copy of the painting for about $11. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
Finally this weekend, a popular kids' TV character is ready to give the late-night talk show hosts a run for their money.
Thanks, everybody. Welcome to The Late Show.
Step aside, Stephen, Jimmy, and Jimmy. Elmo is getting his own talk show, The Not Too Late Show.
Hi, Mr. Noodle.
He'll interview celebrity guests at a more decent hour for kids. It's part of Sesame Workshop's new deal with HBO Max, which will make more episodes available on demand, including classics from the past 50 years. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. John Whitley is the technical supervisor. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.